Chapter 1. Flavor and Seasoning. From the World Cooking Systems Atlas. After this chapter, you will not need to be told that a dish is missing something. You will be able to name what is missing, in which direction, and from which moment in the cooking. 1. Why flavor is not taste. There is a moment that almost every home cook has lived through. The dish comes off the heat. You taste it from the spoon. It is right. You plate it. You bring it to the table. Someone takes a bite and says kindly that it is missing something. You taste again. They are right. Something has shifted in the few minutes between the pan and the plate. The salt is there. The acid is there. The ingredients are good. The recipe was followed. And yet on the plate, something is not arriving. Most cooks blame themselves for this. They start adding things. A squeeze of lemon, another pinch of salt, a dash of soy sauce, and one of those additions by chance lands. The dish is rescued, but the cook does not know what rescued it. The next time they cook the same dish, they don't know what to do differently. They are still guessing. This chapter is for the moment between the pan and the plate. The first thing to know is that taste and flavor are not the same word. Taste is what the tongue does. It detects 5 things: salt, sweet, sour, bitter, umami. That is the entire vocabulary the tongue has. Flavor is what the brain assembles from taste, plus several other inputs the tongue knows nothing about. The aroma rising from the dish, the temperature of the bite, the texture under the teeth, the cold of the air, the memory of having eaten something like this before. When a recipe gives you a list of ingredients and a list of steps, it is mostly working on taste. It tells you how much salt, how much acid, what to add, and when. What the recipe usually cannot do is describe what is happening in the brain of the person eating several seconds after the spoon arrives. That is where flavor lives, and that is where most home cooks lose dishes that should be working. The cook who learns to think about flavor, not just taste, stops adding things at random when something feels off. They stop apologizing for dishes that just need something and don't know what. They develop a small calm habit of asking, before they reach for more salt, which of 7 things is actually missing. That is the work of this chapter. 2. The 7 axes of flavor. A dish is balanced when 7 things are in a working relationship with each other. Not all 7 need to be present at full volume. Many great dishes feature only 3 or 4, with the others kept deliberately quiet. But the cook needs to know all 7 exist, because when something is missing, it will almost always be one of these. The 7 are: salt, the multiplier; acid, the brightener; fat, the carrier; aroma, the volatile signal, the releaser; texture, the dimensional layer; memory, the cognitive frame. The order is not a hierarchy. Salt is first because every cook reaches for it most often, and because misuse of salt explains more bland dishes than any other single error. But fat carries aroma, and aroma can carry the whole dish, and heat is what releases the aroma in the first place. The axes work together. The model is a system, not a stack. Salt the multiplier. Salt does not add a flavor of its own to most dishes. It makes the flavors that are already there louder. A pinch on an undersalted tomato does not make the tomato taste salty. It makes the tomato taste more like a tomato. This is the property home cooks most often miss. The mistake is to season at the end. Salt added at the end will sit on the surface and taste like salt. Salt added at the beginning, in the pasta water, on the surface of the meat before the sear, into the onion as it sweats, dissolves into the dish and becomes invisible while doing its real work. Most great recipes salt in 3 or 4 moments, not 1. The other property is rarely named. A small amount of salt suppresses bitterness. This is why a tiny pinch of salt makes a grapefruit taste sweeter, why coffee with a few crystals tastes rounder, why a salted caramel works at all. When a dish has a faint, persistent bitter undertone you cannot explain, a slightly too old garlic, a slightly charred crumb, a careful pinch of salt added late can dial it down without making the dish salty. This is a tool to use sparingly. It is also a tool that exists. Acid, the brightener. Acid is what makes a dish taste like food and not like an experiment. It cuts through fat, lifts dull umami, breaks up the heaviness of long-cooked dishes, and gives the brain the signal this is fresh. The lemon over grilled fish, the vinegar in the salad, the splash of rice vinegar over fried rice at the moment of serving, the lime in a curry, these are not flavor additions in the way salt is. They are arrival signals. They tell the eater the dish has just been made. Acid has 3 arrivals, and the cook must know which one they are using. Built-in acid is in the cooking from the start. Tomato in the braise, wine in the reduction, vinegar in the marinade. This acid mellows during the cook. It is the structural acid of the dish. Late acid goes on at the end and barely cooks. A squeeze of lemon over the fish as it leaves the pan. A spoon of vinegar over the warm beans. This acid is bright and forward. Structural acid is the dish's whole spine, a vinaigrette, a ceviche, a pickle. The acid is not adding, it is constructing. When a dish is described as flat, the home cook reaches for salt. The chef reaches for acid roughly as often. A few drops of vinegar or a wedge of lemon will rescue many dishes that no amount of additional salt can fix, because the cook had structural acid but had cooked the brightness out of it. The fix is late acid on the plate. Fat, the carrier. Fat is not a flavor in the sense that salt and acid are. Fat is a carrier. It dissolves volatile aroma compounds that water cannot reach, and it holds them in the mouth long enough for the brain to register them. This is why a sauce made with a generous spoon of butter at the end tastes like more of itself than the same sauce without. The butter is not adding flavor of its own. It is collecting and broadcasting the flavor that was already there. There are three places fat does its work in a dish. As the medium, the oil the aromatics bloom into, the butter the onions sweat in. Without this fat, the volatile compounds in garlic, ginger, dried chili, fennel seed, mustard seed have nowhere to dissolve into. They scorch on dry pan, or they release into water and disperse. As the structure, the emulsion that holds a sauce together. Hollandaise, mayonnaise, vinaigrette, the beurre blanc, the pasta water emulsion of cacio e pepe. Without this structural fat, the dish exists as separated parts. With it, the dish has a body. As the finish, the cold spoon of butter mounted into a pan sauce at the moment before plating. The drizzle of olive oil over the hot soup. The sesame oil at the end of a stir fry. This fat barely cooks. It does not change the dish's chemistry. It changes the dish's mouthfeel and broadcasts every aroma that is already there. The cook who can name which of the three roles their fat is playing in a given dish has solved a problem most cooks don't know they have. Aroma, the volatile signal. Aroma is the most powerful axis and the least controllable. Most of what we call the taste of a dish is, technically, aroma. The volatile molecules that rise from hot food enter the nose at the back of the mouth and bind to olfactory receptors that the tongue does not have. A cold dish loses most of its flavor. A stuffed nose during a winter cold loses almost all of it. The cook's job with aroma is to understand its three states. Trapped. The aroma is locked inside whole spices, dried herbs, intact garlic cloves, whole fennel bulbs. Until those are crushed, cut, ground, or heated, the aroma stays put. Released. The aroma is now active. The whole cumin has been toasted. The garlic has been bruised in the mortar. The basil has been torn. The temperature is right, and the dish is starting to smell of itself. Lost. Too much heat, too much time, and the volatiles have evaporated faster than they can land in the mouth. A stew that simmered 8 hours uncovered will taste rounder, but flatter than the same stew finished with a half tablespoon of the same aromatics added in the last 3 minutes. The two most common aroma mistakes are simply not releasing the aroma at all, raw garlic added to a finished sauce, and releasing it too early, basil cooked into the tomato sauce from the start, by which time the basil has burned off and contributes nothing. Most aromas are added in two passes, a long one early, for depth, and a short one at the end, for arrival. Heat, the releaser. Heat is the master variable. It is what turns the trapped aroma into the released aroma. It is what drives the Maillard reaction that turns dull pale food into something with a brown crust and 20 new molecules of flavor. It is what gelatinizes starch into body. It is what coagulates egg yolk into custard. Heat is also what kills flavor when misapplied. The same garlic, in cold oil, slow warmed, will infuse the oil with sweet round garlic. In screaming hot oil, the same garlic will burn in 3 seconds and turn the dish bitter. The same fish, in a pan at 200 degrees for 2 minutes per side, will give up its juices and brown into something with a crust. In a pan at 90 degrees for 2 minutes per side, the same fish will give up its juices and steam into something pale and damp. The cook who controls heat controls flavor. This is why chapter 5 of this book is about heat in detail. For now, when a dish tastes flat, ask if the aromatics were released, scorched, or never heated. Those are three different answers, with three different fixes. Texture, the dimensional layer. Texture is flavor in a sense most cooks do not realize. The brain registers a single bite of food along all of its sensory channels at once. A crisp element and a soft element on the same fork produces a more flavored experience than the same ingredients smooth. This is why almost every great dish has at least one textural contrast. The croutons in the soup, the fried shallots over the curry, the pickled vegetable next to the rich meat, the cracker against the smooth dip. Texture is also why a dish at the wrong temperature tastes wrong, even when nothing else has changed. A cold sauce is dull, because cold suppresses aroma volatility. A lukewarm steak is wrong, because the textural difference between the crust and the interior has collapsed. Both feel the same in the mouth. When a dish tastes flat and the seasoning is right, the answer is sometimes simply, add a crunch. A handful of toasted nuts, a torn piece of fried bread, a sprinkle of crisp shallots. These additions read on the palate as new flavor, even though they contribute almost no flavor compounds. The brain registers the textural contrast as information, and information is what it wants. Memory, the cognitive frame. The last axis is the one no recipe writes about, and every cook works inside. The eater's memory frames the dish before the dish has even arrived. A bowl of miso soup is a different experience for a person who grew up eating miso soup at breakfast every morning, and for a person tasting it for the first time at a friend's table. The first eater is checking the soup against 30 years of memory. The second is calibrating from scratch. The cook cannot control this axis, but the cook can be aware of it. Cooking a familiar dish for someone who has never eaten it before is not the same job as cooking the same dish for someone who has. The first eater wants the surface to be coherent. The second wants the inside to match their memory. A pho cooked for a Vietnamese friend is held to a different standard than a pho cooked for someone who has had pho 3 times in their life. The cook's tool here is honesty. Frame the dish for what it is. This is one version of pho. There are many. This is a Levantine baked variant. Others exist. This is the home version, not the restaurant one. When the eater's memory is given a frame, the dish can land where it lands, without disappointing on a comparison the cook never knew was happening. This is also why this chapter and this book are written carefully about other cuisines. The eater's memory is real. To say this is the only authentic X is to step on someone else's memory. To say this is one version of X is to honor it. The flat taste diagnostic. Most home cooks have, at some point, tasted a dish and felt it was missing something they could not name. The next move is usually to add salt. Salt sometimes fixes it. Salt often does not. Adding salt to a dish that does not need more salt is one of the most common reasons for a dish to swing from flat to overworked in a single move. Then, walks through the 5 questions in this order. The first question that answers yes is the fix. The dish tastes flat. Try these in order. Salt. Is the salt low? Test a single pinch in a single spoonful from the pot. If that one spoonful tastes right and the rest doesn't, it's salt. Fix. Salt the whole pot in 1 or 2 stages. Acid. Is the brightness gone? Test a few drops of lemon or vinegar in a single spoonful. If the spoonful comes alive, it's acid. Fix. Late acid on the plate, not stirred into the pot. Umami. Is there nothing for the savory channel to latch onto? Test a small spoon of soy, fish sauce, miso, parmesan rind, tomato paste, anchovy, or dried mushroom soak liquid. If the spoonful goes round and savory, it's umami. Fix. Add the umami source to the pot at the appropriate stage. Early for braised umami, late for surface umami. Aromatic. Is the aroma trapped or lost? Test. Bruise a fresh herb, crack a peppercorn, toast a small spoon of whole spice and rest it on the dish. If the dish suddenly smells like itself, the aromatic was the problem. Fix. Add fresh aromatic at the end, not stirred in. Texture temperature. Is there nothing for the mouth to feel against the smoothness? Test. Add a single textural element to the plate. Toasted breadcrumbs, fried shallot, a pickled bite. If the dish reads as more flavorful with no flavor change, the texture was the problem. If none of the 5 solves it, the dish was probably constructed with the wrong protein or the wrong cooking method for what the cook was after. That is not a seasoning problem. That is a recipe selection problem, and it cannot be fixed at the stove. This decision tree is the single most useful artifact of this chapter. It does not require the cook to learn new ingredients. It teaches them which question to ask in which order. The cost of running through all 5 questions in real time is about 2 minutes. The cost of seasoning blind is sometimes the whole dish. 4. How different cuisines build flavor differently. Every cuisine balances the 7 axes. They do not balance them the same way. What follows is a quick tour through several traditions, framed as variations on the same grammar rather than as separate systems. None of these descriptions is exhaustive, and none of them is meant to flatten the variety inside a single tradition. They are starting points for the cook who wants to read a foreign dish and predict which axes are doing the work. French, built-in acid and fat forward. The acid is in the deglaze, the wine reduction, the cooked in lemon. The fat is in the buttermount and the cream finish. Aromatics arrive in two passes, the mirepoix at the bottom of the pan and the fresh herd at the end. Heat is patient. The French dish tends to layer slowly, taste round, and arrive at the plate already balanced. Japanese, umami forward and acid restrained. The dashi is built early and quietly. The soy and miso arrive late, so their aromatics survive. The vinegar in a sunamono is structural, not late. Heat is held inside narrow windows, 85 degrees Celsius for dashi, off heat for miso. The Japanese dish tends to taste rounded around umami with very little surface aroma, on purpose. Late aroma is added selectively, yuzu zest, a leaf of shiso, a small pinch of grated wasabi. Thai, front of palate aggressive and fast layered. Salt, fish sauce, sweet, palm sugar, sour lime, heat, chili, aroma, kaffir lime leaf, Thai basil, lemongrass, all pushed forward at the same time. The plate balance is checked at the moment of serving. The cook tastes, adjusts fish sauce or sugar or lime, then serves. The dish is not designed to be balanced once and cooked to that balance. It is designed to be balanced at the last second. Mexican. Aromatic forward and multi-stage. The chili paste is toasted and ground separately. The salsa is made separately. The protein is cured or marinated separately. The dish on the plate is the assembly of three or four constructions that each carry one axis. Heat is layered. A fresh chili, dried chili, smoky chili, all in the same plate. The eater's mouth keeps finding new aromatics. Levantine and Eastern Mediterranean. Acid forward and bright. Lemon, sumac, vinegar, yogurt, all do the brightening work that fat does in a French dish. Aroma comes from za'atar, fresh herbs in volume, garlic raw and cooked, allspice and cinnamon. Heat is moderate. The Levantine dish reads as fresh and clean on the palate, even when the protein has been braised for hours. Italian. Ingredient balance with minimum additions. Three ingredients in proper proportion is the central skill. Pasta water, cheese, pepper. Olive oil, garlic, chili. Tomato, basil, mozzarella. The Italian cook trusts the ingredients to carry the dish, if the proportion is right. Aromatics are usually 1 to 3, deeply tuned. Heat is medium and slow. The seasoning is salt and 1 acid. Korean. Ferment forward and structurally layered. The aged kimchi, the gochujang, the doenjang, the soy. The dish's depth comes from ingredients that have already been working for weeks or months before they arrive. Plate balance is built across many small dishes, banchan, that the eater assembles bite by bite. The diner controls the final balance on the chopsticks. Indian, a vast simplification of many cuisines. Spice blend forward and oil released. The dish opens with whole spices bloomed in oil or ghee. The tadka proceeds through layered pastes, ginger, garlic, onion, tomato, and arrives at a final seasoning of more whole spices added at the end, a second tadka in some dishes. Aroma is added in volume, in multiple passes, and is the dish's central axis. The point of the tour is not memorization. It is the small but important shift in the cook's head, from Thai food is fish sauce and lime, to Thai food balances 7 axes at the last moment, while French food balances 7 axes early and lets them settle. That shift, once made, is permanent. The cook can read a recipe from a tradition they have never cooked and predict which axis will arrive when, before they have started. Worked examples from the catalog. The next move for the cook is to look at recipes they may have already made, this time through the 7-axis lens. The recipes below are linked to the site. What follows each link is a 1-paragraph reading of what flavor work the dish is doing. Aglio e olio. 3 ingredients, all the layering work. Garlic, olive oil, pasta water. Salt comes from the pasta water. Acid is absent and not missed. The dish is finished with a very small squeeze of lemon, in some versions with parsley in others. Fat is the entire dish. Oil as medium for garlic. Oil as emulsifier when whisked with pasta water at the end. Aroma is everything that garlic and chili are doing. Heat is the variable. Warm enough to bloom garlic, cool enough not to burn it. Texture comes from the pasta and a single optional crumb topping. The 7 axes are mostly off, except for fat and aroma. This is what the Italian minimum additions principle looks like at its purest. Banh mi, 5 axes simultaneously, in 1 bite. a baguette, texture, crisp shell, soft interior. Pâté, or fatty pork, fat, pickled daikon and carrot, acid, plus texture.
Cilantro and chili,
aroma, plus heat.
Fish sauce or Maggi,
umami plus salt.
Mayonnaise,
fat carrier.
The dish is the Thai philosophy on a Vietnamese frame. Every axis present, balanced at the moment of construction.
Eat the same banh mi with one element removed. No pickle, no chili, no fresh herb, and the failure is instructive. The axis you removed is the one you taste missing.
Bibimbap, sectioned layering,
not stirred. A bowl of rice with separate sections of seasoned vegetables, a protein, a fried egg, and gochujang. Before the eater stirs, the dish is the seven axes laid out on a circle. After the eater stirs, the seven axes become one. The brilliance is that the eater controls the proportion. Too much gochujang on the first spoon? Stir less. Want more spinach? Take a section. Korean cuisine treats balance as a thing the eater participates in, not a thing the cook finalizes.
Salade niçoise,
Western mosaic of the same principle. Tomato, tuna, egg, olive, anchovy, green bean, potato, lettuce, each prepared separately, dressed lightly with vinaigrette, and arranged on a plate. The structure is identical to bibimbap with French ingredients. The eater builds the bite. The cook's job is to season each component well, dress them at the right moment, and let the assembly happen on the fork.
Ginger scallion sauce.
Minimum ingredients, maximum layering. Ginger, scallion, neutral oil, salt, a small splash of sesame oil. The hot oil is poured over the raw aromatics, which releases them all at once. Acid is added at table from the rice vinegar bottle. Umami is added at table from the soy. The sauce by itself is two axis, aroma, fat. And at the table is six axis, everything except memory, which the eater brings. This is one of the cleanest demonstrations in the catalog of how few ingredients are required when the layering is right.
Pad Thai,
five axis tasting on every bite. Sweet, palm sugar. Sour, tamarind, lime. Salt, fish sauce. Heat, chili. Aroma, peanuts, garlic, dried shrimp. The protein and the noodle are vehicles. The dish is balanced at the wok over a minute. A pad Thai that tastes flat is almost always tamarind deficient. A pad Thai that tastes shark is sugar deficient. The cook tastes, adjusts, plates. Ají de gallina, bread as flavor carrier. Peruvian chicken in a creamy yellow chili sauce, thickened with bread soaked in milk. The bread is doing two jobs, thickening texture structure and carrying fat-soluble aroma suspended in the milk bread emulsion. The ají amarillo, yellow chili, brings aroma plus moderate heat. The walnut and cheese in some versions add umami. This is a dish where one ingredient, bread, is doing the structural work of two or three.
Bo Luc Lac, Vietnamese-French collision of layering systems.
Cubed beef tossed with garlic, oyster sauce, and a touch of sugar. Served over watercress, with a side of rice, and a small dish of lime juice, plus salt, plus pepper. The French pan-sear discipline meets the Vietnamese front-of-palate balance. The eater dips the beef into the lime salt pepper at table. Two systems, working together at the seam.
6. Common misunderstandings.
More ingredients means more flavor. Often the opposite. A dish with 18 ingredients that all play the salt, acid, umami chord at the same volume tastes muddled, not deep. A dish with 5 ingredients in proper proportion can taste deeper than a dish with 20 in random proportion.
Depth is layering. Different things doing their work at different moments, not additions.
Salt should go in at the end. Salt added at the end sits on the surface and tastes like salt. Salt added at the beginning dissolves into the dish and disappears, doing its real work invisibly. Most dishes want salt at 3 or 4 moments. The pasta water, the surface of the meat before searing, the onion as it sweats, a small adjustment at the end. The cook who salts only at the end is salting a finished dish from the outside, which is the hardest place to season from.
Spicy means flavorful.
Heat, capsaicin, is a sensation, not a flavor. A dish that is hot from chili is not a dish that is high flavor. It is a dish with a strong sensation. Many great dishes use heat at the level of a quiet hum to lift the other axes, not as a leading note. A dish that tastes only of chili is a dish where the cook has used heat as a substitute for layering.
Tastes flat means I missed an ingredient.
Sometimes, more often, the ingredients are present, but mistimed. The aroma was added too early and has cooked off. The acid was added too early and has cooked out. The fresh herb was stirred in 20 minutes before serving, instead of 1 minute. The fix is rarely a new ingredient. The fix is usually the same ingredient at a different moment.
Bitter is bad. Bitter is a balance partner. The bitter of dark chocolate makes sugar legible. The bitter of charred onion makes braised depth legible. The bitter of espresso makes cream sweet. Bitter is what gives sweet and umami their backstop. Recipes that flatten all bitter from a dish tend to taste flat in exactly the way no amount of salt can fix. This is the authentic way. No tradition is one way. Even within a single household in a single town, the same dish has variations. Authenticity claims are usually claims about a particular family's version, or a particular restaurant's, or a particular chef's. The cook who frames their dish as one version is more accurate, and lets the eater bring their own memory to the table, without conflict. I asked him once, what changed between the second taste and the third? He said the fish sauce had not added anything. It had organized the things that were already there. The broth at the second tasting had all the flavor it would ever have. What it did not have was focus. The fish sauce was the focus. I think about that pot of broth often. The cook who can recognize when a dish has all its flavor, but not yet its focus, has graduated from making food to finishing food. The seven axes are the cook's working set. The eighth thing, the thing my colleague was doing, is the move that organizes them. It is not a separate axis. It is the moment of attention at the end, when the cook puts down the spoon, tastes once more, and asks the dish what it still wants. Sometimes the dish wants nothing. That is the dish telling the cook to plate it. This is also, I should add, the chef's discipline, knowing when to stop. The fix-it instinct that drives a home cook to add one more pinch, one more drop, one more squeeze, is the same instinct that pushes a dish past balance into overworked. The hardest sentence for many cooks to say to themselves at the stove is, "It is done." Most cooks add too much, almost none add too little. If the seven axes are a working chord, the chef is the one who knows when the chord has resolved and the song is over. Summary. The reader who has finished this chapter has gained, at minimum, four things. First, the language. Taste is what the tongue does. Flavor is what the brain assembles. The cook who keeps these two words separate stops making one kind of error. Second, the seven axes. Salt, acid, fat, aroma, heat, texture, memory. The dish is balanced when these are in a working relationship, not when all seven are at maximum volume. Most dishes use three or four loud and three or four quiet, on purpose. Third, the diagnostic. When something feels off, the cook now has a five-question script to run through in order. Salt, acid, umami, aroma, texture. The first yes is the fix. The cook is no longer guessing. Fourth, the eye for other cuisines. The cook can now read a Thai recipe, or a Levantine recipe, or a Korean recipe, and predict within the first paragraph which axes the dish will lean into and which it will leave quiet. The cook does not need to have cooked the dish before. The grammar is shared. What the reader has not gained is a list of recipes. That is the rest of the book and the rest of the site. This chapter is a tool.